we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
You know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices, Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, August 16th, 2019. I'm your host, Elise Jacobson, and with me today is guest control room operator Jim Minky. Tomorrow, August 17th, is both International Homeless Animals Day and Black Cat Appreciation Day. My featured guest on today's show is Maria Sorosky, co-founder and director of the Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association, or VOCRA. I'm fortunate to have her right here in the studio with me. We'll be chatting later about the amazing work VOCRA does in rescuing orphan kittens and cats in the Vancouver area, talking a little about Black Cat Appreciation Day and why it's important, and more. That's coming up in about 20 minutes, so stay tuned. We're about halfway through August now, and August also happens to be fishing month. Today, we're going to play some informative clips for you about the fishing industry and its effect on fishes and other sea life, on our oceans, and on the planet as a whole. Many people have no idea just how destructive this industry is, particularly large-scale commercial fishing operations, and what a dire state the oceans are currently in. So the first clip we'll play for you is a short lesson on overfishing by Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson and Jennifer Jacquet. Take a listen.
Fish are in trouble. The cod population off Canada's east coast collapsed in the 1990s. Intense recreational and commercial fishing has decimated Goliath grouper populations in South Florida. And most populations of tuna have plummeted by over 50%, with the southern Atlantic bluefin on the verge of extinction. Those are just a couple of many examples. Overfishing is happening all over the world. How did this happen? When some people think of fishing, they imagine relaxing in a boat and patiently reeling in the day's catch. But modern industrial fishing, the kind that stocks our grocery shelves, looks more like warfare. In fact, the technologies they employ were developed for war. Radar, sonar, helicopters, and spotter planes are all used to guide factory ships towards dwindling schools of fish. Long lines with hundreds of hooks or huge nets round up massive amounts of fish, along with other species like seabirds, turtles, and dolphins. And fish are hauled up onto giant boats, complete with onboard flash freezing and processing facilities. All of these technologies have enabled us to catch fish at greater depths and farther out at sea than ever before. And as the distance and depth of fishing have expanded, so has the variety of species we target. For example, the Patagonian toothfish neither sounds nor looks very appetizing, and fishermen ignored it until the late 1970s. Then it was rebranded and marketed to chefs in the U.S. as Chilean sea bass, despite the animal actually being a type of cod. Soon it was popping up in markets all over the world and is now a delicacy. Unfortunately, these deep water fish don't reproduce until they're at least 10 years old, making them extremely vulnerable to overfishing when the young are caught before they've had a chance to spawn. Consumer tastes and prices can also have harmful effects. For example, shark fin soup is considered such a delicacy in China and Vietnam that the fin has become the most profitable part of the shark. This leads many fishermen to fill their boats with fins, leaving millions of dead sharks behind. The problems aren't unique to toothfish and sharks. Almost 31% of the world's fish populations are overfished, and another 58% are fished at the maximum sustainable level. Wild fish simply can't reproduce as fast as 7 billion people can eat them. Fishing also has impacts on broader ecosystems. Wild shrimp are typically caught by dragging nets the size of a football field along the ocean bottom, disrupting or destroying seafloor habitats. The catch is often as little as 5% shrimp. The rest is bycatch, unwanted animals that are thrown back dead. And coastal shrimp farming isn't much better. Mangroves are bulldozed to make room for shrimp farms, robbing coastal communities of storm protection and natural water filtration, and depriving fish of key nursery habitats. So what does it look like to give fish a break and let them recover? Protection can take many forms. In national waters, governments can set limits about how, when, where, and how much fishing occurs, with restrictions on certain boats and equipment. Harmful practices such as bottom trawling can be banned altogether. And we can establish marine reserves closed to all fishing to help ecosystems restore themselves. There's also a role for consumer awareness and boycotts to reduce wasteful practices like shark finning and push fishing industries towards more sustainable practices. Past interventions have successfully helped depleted fish populations recover. There are many solutions. The best approach for each fishery must be considered based on science, respect for the local communities that rely on the ocean, and for fish as wild animals. And then the rules must be enforced. International collaboration is often needed too, because fish don't care about our borders. We need to end overfishing. Ecosystems, food security, jobs, economies, and coastal cultures all depend on it.
That is certainly compelling and rather disturbing information. Again, that was Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson and Jennifer Jacquet. So what can we do about this? What is the most effective approach? Here's a short interview with documentary filmmaker Ali Tabrizi, in which he reveals more surprising facts about the fishing industry and makes a case for leaving fishes off our plates.
Hey, this is Ryan of Happy Healthy Vegan. I'm here with Ali Tabrizi, who's in the middle of a multi-year project on a film, a documentary about the state of our ocean. And so instead of me waxing on about that, I'm going to let you, who knows much more about this now because you've been immersed into it.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think is the I know there's many issues surrounding what's going on with the oceans and fish. Why should people not eat fish?
There's so many reasons why I encourage people to think twice about eating fish, especially when people are starting to think about their diet more these days, transitioning from red meats to other sorts of meats, because the information is getting out about how damaging these products are for not only the environment, but for your health. Footage of these animals in these slaughterhouses is just nasty. But
yeah, people see fish as a positive, healthy, absolutely, environmentally better alternative to red meat and the like. So what have you learned in your research here?
Well, I used to think this as well. I used to think that there was like sort of like a scale, and it used to get like better and better for your health the further down like sized animal you go. So you go from cow to pig, chicken to fish, and they're at the bottom. But what I've started to realize is they're basically all the same. The amount of cholesterol found in like a T-bone steak is about the same as just a handful of shrimp. So like people think that it's somehow healthier to eat shrimp or prawns or fish, but it's actually the same amount of cholesterol oftentimes, same amount of saturated fat.
Right.
It varies, it does vary, but generally
still,
it's the same.
And
when we get into
better.
When we get into pollutants and toxins that are found in fish, something like 70% of all the chemicals produced since the Industrial Revolution are found in fish. 70%. So it's thousands of chemicals that are found in fish, so...
Wow, that's shocking.
Yeah.
That must be like literally thousands upon thousands of chemicals that are found in today's fish.
Yeah. So just on a health stance alone, there's reasons enough for you to, you know, mercury as well, and how that affects infant and childbirth and everything else, and the neurological effects of that. Just on those basis alone, it should be enough to make people think twice about it.
Yeah, pollutants concentrate into fish, right? So if people think they're making a healthier choice by having fish, we've shown the cholesterol, saturated fat are not improved, and in fact, you're getting more pollutants by eating fish. So on a health measure, it's no improvement, it's no better. How about environmentally? People think, well, they've seen Cowspiracy. Who Kip from Cowspiracy has helped producing your documentary, is that correct?
That's right.
All right, and if anyone's seen that, knows how the horrible effect that animal agriculture is having on the environment. So a lot of people are thinking, okay, I don't want to go vegan, that's too tough, maybe I'll just eat fish. How is that? Is that an improvement?
Yeah, the amount of times people have asked me this, is fish better for the environment? Straight up, it isn't. You can find some areas of the world, like if you're, you know, a small indigenous tribe in the middle of nowhere, and like, you know, you have a few fish. We're not talking about those people. We're talking about people like in this civilization where, you know, people are watching YouTube and just going to supermarkets.
Commercial fishing.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, the fishing industry is probably the most ruthless when it comes to the destruction of the environment, especially as it's so hard to regulate. These ships are hundreds of miles out at sea. They have fishing nets hundreds of kilometers long, like 100 kilometer long lines.
Mind-blowing.
Trawlers that just literally, like, the bulldoze.
The bottom of the ocean,
yeah, exactly.
And get anything and everything in its path.
And so you don't know what you're catching when you're sticking a net into the ocean.
So
you know,
issue of bycatch?
Bycatch is huge. It's absolutely huge. I mean, it's something ridiculous, like 40%. All the facts can be found on our Instagram page at the moment, at Seaspiracy. And that's where all the facts are, but it's huge. When we're talking about also the bycatch of larger marine animals, such as dolphins and whales and sharks and turtles, these animals are getting wiped out, literally from small amounts of plastic, small effects from climate change, but the big player in this is the fishing industry.
So what is the state? How healthy are the current major fisheries on this planet?
They're really not doing good. It's something like 3/4 of the world's fisheries are overexploited, on the verge of collapse.
So for vegans, that sounds great. It's going to force people to not eat fish, but we're not the only people on or creatures on this planet that have an appetite for fish, correct?
No, absolutely not. You know, the other animals depend on those fish.
Depend.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And the thing is, it's like if we don't decide now, nature will decide for us. So whether we overfish them to the point where we have no other choice but to eat plant-based foods, with a growing population of 7 billion people, growing even more, like 9 and 10 billion, we're going to have to start thinking about this. Plants will always be more sustainable.
And I'm waiting for that day. I hope we make a choice before that. But unfortunately, other species will be affected or wiped out before that, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Sharks are on the verge of extinction. They're down to only about 5 to 10% of their historic numbers. 90% of all predatory fish are gone. It's like beautiful species like whale sharks are down to like I think it's like 30% of what they used to be. Blue whales down to like 3% of what they used to be. And it's so hard to measure these things. The ocean is a big place, and trying to regulate and trying to number all these animals is a very hard job. But they're all on the verge of collapse and in extinction.
Wow, just because we have such a penchant for commercial fishing and the pollutants that we're putting into the ocean.
There's multiple reasons, but the fishing industry is being forgotten. There's a big emphasis on plastic at the moment, which is amazing to see. Plastic does need more attention, and the effects of like pollution and all those things. But the big ones really are the fishing industry.
Okay, so fishing outweighs plastic and other toxins.
Yeah, no, I mean, not to downplay those issues, but
that has a bigger impact.
Yeah, absolutely, So, and people don't like to think about like changing food as much as they do think like talking about like the packaging that the food comes in, but really that needs to be the emphasis.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what other things? We've talked about the personal health, the planetary health. What else? What else can we get out there to let this shock people into like realizing, wow, maybe you shouldn't eat fish anymore?
Yeah, I mean, people just don't generally connect with fish, and I totally understand that. I mean, I've spent the last year or two really focusing on this fish issue and the ocean issue, and I've really come to really connect with the ocean and to connect with those marine animals. But yeah, people just don't connect with them. And there's some great information out there. There's a book called What a Fish Knows by Jonathan Balcombe, which just came out, and the information in that book is incredible. The studies on fish, how they respond to pain, how they respond to pleasure, the way that some fish use tools to open their food. This is the kind of behavior that we've only just been studying in primates and other animals like that, but they can be seen in fish. It's incredible. The way they use democracy in schools of fish, the way they migrate, the way they attract mates. This is the kind of behavior that you can see in like dogs and pigs and monkeys and dolphins now being seen in fish. It's incredible.
So in case your opinion hasn't been changed by our little video here, I'm sure your opinion will be changed once your documentary film finally comes out. So how can people follow you? Where do they need to go? And will they be able to not only get notifications, will they be able to get some facts and stuff from you too?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the film's not going to be out for a little while. But at the moment, Lucy over on the Instagram page has been working hard, doing all the research for several months and condensing them into kind of little memes with descriptions of the actual facts. So go ahead on head over to Instagram at Seaspiracy, and you'll see loads of pictures that Lucy's been creating, and they're just wealth of information there, so you can repost those. And also on our website, www.seaspiracy.org, there's a little sign up box that you can put your email into, and you'll get updates of when the film's going to be available. So yeah,
be sure to follow them and be sure to watch out for their movie. It's anything like, you know, in the vein of like Cowspiracy and With the Health, it's going to blow people's minds. I'm so happy, I'm so proud that you're doing this. So cool.
Awesome.
So thanks for popping by. I know you got you're busy here on your swing through the United States, so I'm glad you made time to come see us.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys have been friends for a while, and it's always good to come down to Long Beach and check out the ocean.
Cool, yeah. That's what we're going to do now. So yeah, let's get out here. Let's go check out the ocean. So yeah. All right, guys. So thanks for watching, and until next time, lay off that fish and keep it carved, baby. Keep it carved.
Round and round again, spinning till
So we hear a lot these days about reducing plastic use. Everyone's heard of the big push to eliminate plastic straws, for example, in order to help reduce the amount of plastic in our oceans. And this is great, of course. It's very important. But did you know that the majority of plastic waste found in the ocean is actually abandoned fishing nets and other fishing gear? For perspective, plastic straws make up 0.03% of ocean plastic, while abandoned fishing nets alone make up 46%, and most of the remainder is other fishing gear. Here's a short segment by Sky News in the UK about how this abundance of fishing industry plastic waste is affecting marine animals off their coastlines.
This is Milford Haven, a beauty spot and conservation area on the tip of West Wales. But underneath the sea here lies all sorts of plastics, including abandoned lobster pots and fishing nets.
It just goes to show the amount of mussels on there as to why the buoys disappear and the pots are lost for good.
And so a group of divers are trying to remove it in a bid to clean up our oceans.
People don't have to travel halfway around the world to see something that's on their doorstep. We've got Grashalm here, second largest gannet colony in the UK. Birds that are dying from fishing nets and stuff like that, and ropes that are lost, and they're just hanging themselves on the rock face.
What the team here do is undoubtedly a lengthy and time-consuming process. On the seabed, marine life use the likes of lobster pots as shelter, but they can often become trapped, much like this seal off the coast of Cornwall that got tangled up in a fishing net. It needed to be treated before being released back into the wild.
58% of all macroplastics in the ocean is ghost fishing gear, so really it's a huge part of the plastic problem, and by its nature it's designed to catch and kill marine life.
The Fat Face Foundation is now turning plastics that come from the sea here in Wales into clothing, like swimming costumes.
The more that we can make people aware of it and that they can make little changes in their lives, whether it's having a different cup for their coffee or having a, you know, a glass bottle or not having not using plastic bags and things. All those little things that people do can contribute on a much bigger scale.
Lost fishing gear, or so-called ghost gear, is among the biggest killers in our oceans. But the divers here in Wales are trying to change that. Rebecca Williams, Sky News.
And finally, we'll hear a little bit from animal behavior expert Jonathan Balcom on the surprising emotional depth and cognitive abilities of fishes, providing another dimension to the case for looking at them as friends, not food. Here, Dr. Balcom is interviewed by journalist Jane Velez Mitchell.
Go.
Hey, Jane, I'm Jonathan Balcom. I'm a biologist, an ethologist, a specialist in animal behavior. I work for the Humane Society Institute for Science and Policy in Washington, D.C. I live in South Florida, and I'm the author of this new book, What a Fish Knows, the first book to, at least recent book, to take a very close examination of the rich, complex lives of these underwater cousins of ours. Fishes are the most underappreciated group of vertebrates and the most eaten. We kill and eat anywhere from several hundred billion to over 2 trillion a year, and the science of their lives, their social lives, their sex lives, their cognitive abilities, their emotional lives, it's fantastic, but it's mostly buried away in scientific journals. So I thought, let's bring this stuff to the public attention, make this available for lay readers and non-scientists so they can see just how rich and complex these animals are, and hopefully that will influence dietary and eating decisions, because until we stop eating them, we're not going to be doing right by them. Humans just kill and eat so many fishes, and they deserve better from us.
And we're destroying the oceans in the process.
Yeah, the oceans are in a lot of trouble. They're beleaguered. There's global warming and ocean warming and ocean acidification leading to coral bleaching, so loss of important habitats for fishes to live in, and of course removal of all those species. You probably heard of commercial extinctions. That's when we've taken so many of a kind of species out of the water that there's not enough to sustain commercial crops. population. I would like to see that commerce fade away anyway, because we need to stop profiting off the oceans. And until we do that, we're not going to be going the right way. Most people don't know that the oceans produce most of the oxygen in the world. More than half of oxygen production comes from the oceans. So if we don't have that, we're not going to be able to breathe. So if the fishes and marine life goes, so go us. We have to do this to protect ourselves, even if we're thinking selfishly.
And you had said something when you were speaking here at the DC Veg Fest about facial recognition and fish.
Yeah, a recent study using archer fishes, which squirt water out of their mouths to catch prey, and so you can train them to squirt at one target versus another, and scientists devised a way to test, do they recognize a familiar human face? And they do. If you present them with 41 faces, only one of which is a familiar face they've seen before, they very quickly choose that one out. Even if you take cues like the hair and other parts of the face, they have enough information to recognize that. So they're very keen visual animals. They recognize and remember stuff. People often think that fishes don't have much of a memory, but actually studies show they remember stuff for months or years. They remember stuff over decades of life. A new study found that Greenland sharks may be over 400 years old, some of them, so they're the oldest lived vertebrates. They're remembering stuff throughout their life. That's longer than we even live, never mind remember stuff.
I want to thank you, Jonathan. I hope everybody gets your book. Let's look, see it one more time. What a Fish Knows. You know, I rescued a goldfish. We named him Google. And I can tell you, I can testify that he had very strong emotions, and he had a life, and he wanted to live. And thank God he's living with an animal activist now. He was brought home as a party favor by someone who abandoned him. And, you know, I saw that this was really painful and tragic for him, and I'm glad that... especially considering what you've told me, I'm glad I took action. So thank you so much.
My pleasure, Jane. Thanks for having me on the show.
And one final thing, you know, there's so many meat alternatives. They have Simple Truth, Gardein, and other meatless, fishless fish. We had one by Gardein the other day that I could have sworn was fish. And ditto for crab cakes. So if you want that seafoody taste, you can get it completely meatless now.
I ate in a place in Sydney, Australia last year called Bliss and Chips, a new vegan fish and chip shop. They used the Gardein fish, and it was delicious. I have to admit, I haven't eaten a fish in about 30 years, but from what I remember of that experience, I wouldn't have been able to tell the difference.
You are so right. And there's actually a vegan tofush and chips. There's a vegan pub in London where we had tofush and chips, which if you take the nori that they use on sushi and you wrap it in tofu and batter it and fry it, it's just like fish too.
Sign me up. I'll try it.
Thank you so much. And thank you for spreading the word.
Sure thing, Jane. Thanks for all you do.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye.
That was biologist and animal behavior expert Jonathan Balcom speaking with Jane Velez Mitchell. We've actually had Dr. Balcom on Animal Voices in the past in November of 2018. You can find the podcast of that show on our website, animalvoices.org, if you're interested in listening. And again, you're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. My guest today is Maria Sorosky, co-founder and director of the Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association, or VOCRA. Hello, Maria, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Thank you very much, Elise. It's really nice to be back.
Yeah, it's great to see you. So, first of all, can you tell me and our listeners about the work that VOCRA does? What kind of organization is it? What is your mission?
Mm-hmm. Well, our organization, VOCRA, is a registered charity. We're also a society in BC. And we are a cat rescue. So what that involves is we did start initially to rescue cats in Vancouver, but it has expanded since then. Because of the work we've done in Vancouver with helping low-income spay and neuter their cats, spaying and neutering the feral cats, taking cats off the street that are homeless, mm-hmm. that's reduced the numbers so much in Vancouver that now we're helping other areas such as Surrey. So if you look at our numbers and see 1,400 cats per year rescued, this is not just Vancouver. This is 70% Surrey.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're helping in other areas. So the kind of organization we are is a cat rescue, and our mission is primarily to rescue cats and kittens off the streets, homeless cats.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, spay and neuter them. If they're tame, find them homes.
Mm-hmm.
And if they happen to be feral, which is an unsocialized cat that's born on the streets, is to spay and neuter them, vaccinate, and then put them back into the location they were found with a caretaker who feeds them.
Wow.
And constantly, you know, watches over them.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing. So it encompasses a lot.
So I'm wondering, when was VOCRA founded? How long have you been doing this, and how many people are involved?
Okay, well, we're coming up on 20 years now.
Wow.
Yes, nice. 20 years. So Karen and I, of course, Karen Duncan is my co-founder, and we started VOCRA. But we had some cat rescue experience before then, which I'll get into a little later.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that, actually. How long have you been doing rescue work, and what got you into it?
Oh, well, 10 years before we founded VOCRA, I volunteered at the Vancouver SPCA Hospital.
Oh, nice.
And I ran their foster program there. And one of the foster parents for bottle feeding little orphan kittens that came in was Karen Duncan.
Oh, nice.
So I got to know Karen that way. And we had a program for kittens that were brought into the SPCA. People would find them in their yards, in a compost pile under a bunch of stuff.
Wow.
And they'd bring in these little newborn kittens who had supposedly no mother.
Yeah.
And we would bottle feed them and raise them and then get them adopted. So that's how I met Karen. But later on in the story, you will find that all these kittens that were being brought into the shelter actually did have mothers.
Oh, dear.
And the reason the mothers were never brought in is because they were too scared for anyone to catch or pick up and bring into the shelter.
Oh, dear.
So I'll tell you about that story.
Yeah, for sure. That's fascinating. So what inspired you to start a rescue organization for orphaned kittens specifically, mm-hmm. like as opposed to any other animal?
Yeah, well, when both of us, Karen and I, were volunteering at the SPCA hospital, there was two or three people who bottle-fed kittens, and also other little small kittens would be brought in. Mm-hmm. You know, they would be able to walk and their eyes were open, or mums with kittens were brought into the SPCA also.
Mm-hmm.
And they would stay at the shelter. And we would try to find them foster homes for them. And we just saw that there was a huge need for the kitten arena of homeless cats.
Right.
Because they need a lot of work, you know. Bottle feeding is every 2 hours,
wow.
around the clock.
Wow.
And they need special care.
And that's when they're just newborn,
yeah.
When they're just
right.
really little.
And if young cats who are too young to be vaccinated are going into a shelter, it's not the best place for them. They need to be in foster homes because they are prone to being exposed to disease,
right.
Cat colds, that sort of thing.
Right.
So the shelter is really no place for them. So mm-hmm. having a foster program in place is ideal.
Mm-hmm.
So Karen and I thought, wow, you know, there's such a need. There's so many of these orphan kittens coming in and little kittens coming in with no mothers that we really need to start our own orphan kitten rescue, right?
That's amazing.
Yeah, so we started in the year 2000. Karen is a doula,
wow.
which helps women give birth, so she was ideally suited for cats giving birth,
nice.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm a registered nurse, so my medical background was a great advantage.
Oh, good.
So we started small and went from there.
Amazing. Yeah. Oh, that's so lovely. So can you tell us about some of the cats and kittens that you currently have available for adoption at Vocra?
Oh, absolutely. Well, like I said, Vancouver has made great strides in the 20 years. We help a lot of people spay and neuter their cats so they don't end up lost and abandoned on the street and having babies out there. But we are helping in Surrey. So we have all sorts of cats and kittens for adoption. We have we adopt kittens out at 10 weeks of age, usually in pairs, or to someone who has another cat.
Okay.
And when they're 10 weeks of old, they've already learned from their mother how to behave. They've been in foster homes, so you know exactly what type of personality you're getting.
Right.
We also have many adult cats. We have the mums. We have tame cats that I've rescued off the street. We have elderly cats, long hair, short hair, black, white, any color you want. And, you know, all the adults are spayed and neutered. And with the adoption fee, of course, comes the spaying and neutering, which we follow up on to make sure that you've done it.
Right.
So we have a lot of cats that need homes. I think there's probably about 350 in our system right now.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't realize it was so big.
Yeah. So if you come to the website, vocra.ca, you'll see a lot of pictures on the galleries and explanations.
Yes.
Yeah. And you really get to see what the cat is like.
Yeah. I checked out your website the other day, and there's some really adorable kitties on there. Yeah,
yeah, and there's a lot coming soon, too, so you can be on a wait list for the younger ones.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Is there a specific reason why you tend to adopt them in pairs?
Because a lot of them are bonded.
Oh, okay.
These cats all come off the streets.
Right.
So we get a whole litter of kittens. Many are bonded, and it's just not psychologically fair to a young kitten to be home all day alone.
Right.
It's very harmful and stressful on them. So if they have a buddy, whether it's a dog or a cat or in pairs, is best psychologically for them.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really good to know. A lot of people don't tend to think of cats as especially social animals.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what would you say are some of the most satisfying or enjoyable parts of rescuing cats and kittens?
Well, you know, there's really satisfying parts, and that is being able to take a cat off the street who has been living, has been lost or abandoned, not neutered or spayed, having babies out there, don't know where to find food, you know. Some are injured, some have gotten into fights because they're not neutered, and rescuing these cats and being able to heal them and have them in a foster home where they can, you know, get better to a point where they're for adoption, and finally see them in their adoptive homes is the most satisfying thing in the world. And knowing that because we're an all-encompassing rescue organization, we also advocate for cats, that they be treated with respect, that they have lifelong homes. We help people with spaying and neutering their cats if they can't afford it. We help the feral cats. That we're actually conquering the problem of cats being left on the streets and helping those cats and preventing cats from having litter after litter after litter.
Absolutely.
So it's very satisfying. And then there's the other side of it too, which is, you know, so hard to talk about. You know, I actually have post-traumatic shock from a lot of the injuries and suffering I've seen out there. A lot of rescuers, whether it's cat rescuers or dog rescuers or small animals, you know, suffer this when they're on the front lines, because you come across animals who are, I just can't even tell you. We can't even talk about it.
Yeah.
Because people don't want to hear about that part, you know?
Of course.
And it's very hard. We've started a support group for all of us, and we've actually had some trauma counseling for it.
Good.
Because it is very hard seeing an animal suffer and knowing they suffered at the hands of humans.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
I can't imagine. Yeah. Yeah, there's just horrendous cruelty to animals, including, you know, animals
that people
normally love. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I've read many stories about people abandoning cats and kittens in, you know, dumpsters and stuff, even in the Vancouver area. And
little pet rats downtown this week. All I think there's about 10 of them were just let out in a back lane.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of them were lying there dead.
Oh,
it was really sad.
So sad. Gosh. So, as I mentioned earlier in the show, tomorrow is not only International Homeless Animals Day, very apropos, but also Black Cat Appreciation Day. So, black cats, unfortunately, are often victims of human superstition. Some people think they bring bad luck. And I understand that they're typically passed over for adoption more often than cats of other colors. Is this consistent with your experience? Mm-hmm. And what do you wish more people knew about black cats?
Well, we all know that black cats were associated with witches and that sort of thing. But I think times are changing. I don't know if that superstition is necessarily that active anymore. And certainly,
that's good to
hear. Certainly we tell them how much black cats are so wonderful. It's a dominant color. So, and in countries, in continents that have cold weather, you'll see black cats. It's a dominant color, so it means that there's going to be more of them.
Right, right.
Right?
For sure.
And in hot countries, you'll see cats with white coats.
Uh-huh.
White coats with spots on them.
That's so interesting.
The white reflects the sun.
Right.
And in colder countries, the black fur brings in the warmth, the sun, into an animal. That's
right.
Why you'll see more black cats. But actually, we don't have that much of a situation with adopting out black cats.
Oh, good.
People love black cats. I love black cats.
Yeah.
But it's just that there's so many of them to choose from.
Right. Okay.
So we, in our photographs and promoting our black cats, we like to tell more about their personality, put little different colored collars on them to make them special, because they all look the same, right?
Right.
But black cats are wonderful, and because it's a dominant gene, it means they're healthier.
Mm-hmm.
And I find black cats to have the best personalities.
Wow.
Docile, really sweet. Yeah, so we appreciate black cats.
Oh, that's good, yeah. You actually were showing me some photos just before the show of a black cat who's available for adoption at Vogra.
Yes.
Can you tell us more about
him? He's soon going to be available for adoption.
Yeah.
We call him Bert, and here in East Van, he was coming for food on a woman's patio.
Mm-hmm.
She saw that he had been having a really hard time eating. He could barely move his jaws, and his ears were all torn up. He wasn't neutered, you know. He had, his jaw looked like there was blood coming out of it.
Oh, gosh.
So I rescued him. We call him Bert, and took him to the vet right away, and he had a horrible abscess in the roof of his mouth that went into his cheek and then into his ear, which almost broke his eardrum open, but it's not. And he was just in really bad shape.
Yeah.
At first, he was very scared and would growl at us.
Wow.
But within days, you could see that he wanted help, and he would allow me to pet him. Now, he's spent most of the last 2 weeks at the vet, because he's been on IV fluids. He's had two surgeries now.
Right.
He had to take his remaining teeth out.
Aww.
Because they were so abscessed. I went to see him yesterday. He's ready to come back to Vokra tomorrow. He'll go into a foster home to recuperate. Now he's the sweetest cat.
Aww.
He purrs. You can pick him up, cuddle him, kiss him.
Oh,
he's
my
so sweet. His name is Bert Reynolds.
Aww.
And we love him.
So cute.
And then also, you know, just before I drove here, I got a call in East Van again about another long-haired black cat who's sitting in some bushes.
Wow.
The cat looks terrible. It's so matted.
Oh,
it's just laying there with its head hanging down.
Oh.
So as soon as I'm finished the show, I'm running over there
and
scoop him up and and we'll take them to the vet right away.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, Maria, yeah. Thank goodness for people like you looking out for these creatures.
Well, thanks to the public for calling us.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
if
absolutely.
You see what you think is an injured cat or a cat that just is hanging around all the time, please call us.
Yeah, that's good to know. Absolutely. So for anyone looking to add a companion animal mm-hmm. to their family, what would you say are the benefits of adopting from a rescue organization such as Vocra?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the benefits is that you know that they've been medically taken care of. They've been vaccinated, dewormed, they're healthy. Mm-hmm. They're in a foster home, so you can actually go see the cat and right. play with it and you know, really see its personality. And of course, the foster can tell you everything about their,
yes.
their little kids.
Yeah.
And you might also consider being a foster if you can't adopt. You know, 20 years is quite a commitment for some people.
Yes.
Young people like to travel. They like to, you know, do all sorts of things. They can't commit to 20 years, but you can foster.
Right.
We provide all the food, litter, everything, and all you have to do is take care of the kitty.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's wonderful. What advice would you have for anyone who would like to get involved in animal rescue?
Okay. Well, I think the best thing to do is to volunteer with the animal rescue of choice. Mm-hmm. Like if you're interested in small animals or dogs or cats or ferrets or birds, start volunteering with the rescue and get involved because they've gone through everything. They've learned, you know, all the mistakes you make and that yeah. sort of thing. And you can really learn how to start an animal rescue that way. So I would say do that. Foster, get a hang for it, you know. Uh-huh. And we have actually mentored many people in small towns in BC to start animal rescues.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So it's not hard. You need to get your community involved.
Yes.
We have probably 600 volunteers here in Vancouver.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
incredible.
Vocra is a community
yeah.
in Vancouver.
That's
we all work to help the cats. So, and there's a lot of mentoring that goes on in networking through BC with the cat rescues.
Right,
we all help
sure.
each other out.
For sure. Oh, yeah. That's fantastic. That's so lovely. So it sounds like there's any number of ways to get involved, mm-hmm. any number of ways to even start your own rescue once you mm-hmm. have more experience, right?
So many volunteer opportunities.
Right. Yeah,
so
that's true.
Many.
There are a lot of animal rescues in,
yeah.
in BC.
And we have many volunteer opportunities.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's good to know. So if I wanted to adopt or foster a kitten through Vocra, how would I get started?
Well, all you do is you come to our website. You can Google us, Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue, or you could Google Vocra, V-O-K-R-A. Mm-hmm. You can come to our Facebook page, Twitter page, but mainly if you want to adopt or foster, you need to fill in an application form, and that is on the website.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good to know. And you also have information about the adoptable cats on the website.
On the website and yeah. photos, yes.
Yeah. Amazing. So we were speaking earlier before the show about the housing crisis in Vancouver and, you know, kind of how this can affect mm-hmm. animal rescue. Can you elaborate on that a little
okay,
bit
okay, I'll just tell you quickly about that. In the last 2 years, but especially this year, in Vancouver, we're seeing a huge increase in cats that are being left behind mm-hmm. when the owners are moving.
Right.
Now, you know we have a housing crisis in Vancouver. It's horrible. There is just nowhere, there's no available suites, and then the suites are unaffordable.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who's on low income, who's allowed $375 for rent on welfare, you can't find anything. You can't even find a closet for $375.
That's true.
Now, the other thing is that almost 98% of rentals are no pets.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
So what I'm seeing is I'm being called about a cat sitting in the yard, and I go there. The neighbors tell me the people were either evicted or they've had to leave. And they've left the cat behind.
Oh, gosh.
Along with a lot of their own possessions are out in the yard, too. So and the other thing is that most of these cats are not fixed.
Oh, dear.
So they're out there having babies.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing an increase in moms and kittens, tame moms and kittens.
Wow.
tame moms and kittens out there.
Yeah.
And a lot of adult tame cats.
Wow.
Just in this last year, it's just exploded.
Yeah.
So it's really hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I guess I know there are sort of pushes for changes in the legislation around, mm-hmm. for example, you know, landlords allowing mm-hmm. Pets in rental suites. Do you have any more information on that, or how?
Well, Ontario doesn't discriminate about people with pets.
Right. Okay.
With their legislation, but we have a really strong landlord union here.
Uh-huh.
The landlord associations do not want pets in their rentals, and they are behind this, pushing the government to not have it not be allowed. So
right.
It's a really strong lobby,
yeah.
And it's not fair. Mm-hmm. And you know, Pets Okay BC
mm-hmm.
is trying to combat this, but we're not really making any headway.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's
that's
tough.
Such a shame. Oh mm-hmm. my gosh. Yeah, I'm just wondering what everyday citizens can do, if we can write to lawmakers or mm-hmm. you know, petition, protest.
Go to the Pets Okay BC, sign their petitions, volunteer for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you're going to get your most activism done.
Yeah. Right.
They Absolutely. Have where you can write. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so important. I think it's something, an aspect of the housing issue that a lot of people don't mm-hmm. think about is how many animals end up homeless because
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, and the people are homeless.
Yeah.
Just look outside.
Absolutely. Especially
look outside our doors. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. Definitely something to think about. So you have a couple of events coming up soon with Vokra. Tell us about those.
Yes, we do. So the Walkathon is our big event. So it's at Jericho Beach Park, Sunday, September 15th. And you come to either our Facebook or website and you can see the details on that. So you actually can come if you are not walking. You can come for the event too, of
yeah.
course. It's right on the beach. And our walkers are raising money for Vokra. So this goes to our vet bills. You know, we're all volunteers, right?
Sure.
We don't get a lot of grants. There's very few grants for animal welfare, I have to say. And, you know, we need to raise money to help all these cats.
Yes, rescue is expensive
yeah.
from what I understand.
So that's Sunday, September 15th. But if you want to just come see us at Pet Food and More on Oak Street, I think it's Oak and like 16th or so, August 24th from 12 to 4, we'll be there talking about Vokra.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Just on the sidewalk out front.
Oh, nice. So what are some other ways in which our listeners can support Vokra?
Oh, well, absolutely. I think if you love animals, you know, you don't even have to be crazy about cats, but, you know, if you love animals, you love all animals.
Of course.
You know, I have a little crow family in
oh,
my yard
wow.
and a little squirrel family, and there's a little bird family, and, of course, we love all animals, right?
Of course.
So, you know, if you want to help us, you can help by donating, you can help by volunteering. Like I said, there's many volunteer opportunities if you can't be around cats if you're allergic mm-hmm. or whatever. You can come to set up events for us. We have
yeah.
tables and that sort of thing. And just support us as a community. If you own a cat, you know, get involved with us. Everybody knows who Vokra is.
Yeah.
And I think the more that you spread the word about what we do, the better we can help cats. So if you do see a stray cat or a cat that you think is injured, please call us. Or if you see kittens wandering in the yard, that is a big red flag. Hey,
yeah.
they don't belong there.
Right.
There's something wrong.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're welcome to anyone joining us
right.
in this.
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. So do you have any other thoughts that you'd like to share with us about cat rescue or about anything?
I'd just like to say that I think a lot of things have changed in the last 20 years in animal welfare in BC here,
mm-hmm.
and it's changed for the good. I think people are more aware of spaying and neutering their pets.
That's good.
I think there's a lot more awareness about animal cruelty in BC, and a lot of people are supportive of helping this being prevented, and also those who are doing the cruelty do get an adequate sentence.
Right.
And also there's the Animal Welfare Advisory Network of BC, which is relatively new in the past 3 years. It's for all the rescues in BC to get together and network and work towards increasing and making animal welfare a priority in BC.
Great.
It's called AWAN, A-W-A-N, or Animal Welfare Network of BC.
Okay, great. Oh, that's very good to know. Well, thank you so much for coming on Animal Voices today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Sharing your experience and insight with us. I've been speaking with Maria Sorosky, co-founder and director of the Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association, or VOCRA. If you'd like to learn more about VOCRA or to adopt or foster a kitten or cat, visit their website at orphankittenrescue.com. You've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Join us next Friday, August 23rd at noon for more informative, animal-friendly programming. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Visit our website, animalvoices.org, where you can stream past shows and download them as podcasts. You can also see our show blog there with detailed links and subscribe to us on iTunes. Stay in touch with us on Facebook and Instagram at Animal Voices Vancouver and on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. We are also currently looking for volunteers to help with producing and hosting shows, operating shows, website maintenance, social media, and more. So if you have any of these skills or a willingness to learn and you're passionate about animal advocacy, shoot us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Training will be provided. We always love to have more people on the team helping out in any way they can, so please get in touch with us that way. You can also send us a message on Facebook. Again, we're at Animal Voices Vancouver. And now we'll leave you with a song. This is Janet Jackson with Black Cat. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals. Ain't no acid in this house.